Hi everyone, how's it going? Welcome back to the XYZ Experiment podcast. It is I, Luke, your Gen Z, and I'm joined today with the usual cast of characters. We've got Fiona and Dash, but today we've got a special guest. One thing that comes up quite often on our podcast is travel and the shifting in the way in which we travel, the philosophy behind traveling. And so today what we thought we might do is spend a bit of time talking about that with a special guest, someone with some lived experience of travel. So I would like to welcome a friend of the podcast, Amelia, on the show. Welcome, Amelia.
Hi, guys. Hello. Thanks so much, Luke. Thanks, Fiona. Thanks, Dash. I'm not sure that I would say I'm an expert in travel by any means, but I'm excited to have a chat about it. I work with Dash and used to work with Luke, and I've lived in Melbourne for about 8 years now, and I grew up in Sydney, and I've done a bit of travel.
And so we invited you on because you're a Gen Z.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most Gen Z thing about you, Amelia?
That's a good question. I think that I should probably say that I would probably be considered a sort of older Gen Z, the same as Luke, I guess. I was born in 1999. I would say probably that the most Gen Z thing about me is that I can't watch a movie, TV show, documentary, anything without also being on my phone at the same time, which is really bad, a really bad habit. But anyway, what can you do?
So does that mean no subtitled shows?
Well, sometimes I also go for a subtitled show, but I'm just not absorbing it at all. I'm just on my phone, like just scrolling and kind of every so often tuning into it. Yeah, no subtitles is probably better for me.
Can I ask something about that? Mm. So I also doom scroll on my phone at the same time. Like when I was younger, like your age, I was actually doing like Sudoku in an actual book and things like that and watching the TV. And I know that Dash does needlepoint sometimes as she watches
TV.
Mm-hmm. It's like you have to keep your hands busy, isn't it, with something.
Yeah.
Do you pick up any of the TV show that you're watching, or is it really like, oh, miss some of that? Or
I think I pick up bits here and there, but I do miss stuff. I live with three girls and my boyfriend, and everyone gets a little bit annoyed at me because I keep asking to rewind. Oh, what was that important scene? They've started saying VIS, very important scene, when something's coming up.
So you look up. You watch.
Put the phone down. Sometimes I get my phone confiscated. But I also knit a bit, not as much as I used to, but that's quite good.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not a generation thing. Maybe it's just a personality thing, but the phone is sort of a generation thing.
I think so.
It definitely is the phone.
Because we didn't have that option growing up.
Thank God.
Yeah, it's not good.
Today, we're talking Gen Z travel, Amelia.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'll just acknowledge as well, because I don't often acknowledge, is just because we're having these questions, like these conversations, it doesn't mean that Gen Z have to be the most introspective about literally everything they do. They don't need to overthink everything they do, despite the fact that I do it. It's just a fun thing to just like reflect on and think about when it comes to travel, because you might actually just think travel is respite and I don't think anything about it. But we just thought it'd be interesting to, and I thought it'd be interesting because we don't often get Gen Z special guests. It would be fun to kind of just talk through that. And rumor has it is you've just come back from traveling, Amelia. Is that true? Are the rumours true?
The rumours are true. I came back about a month ago, but I was only travelling for a month. So, I went to the US.
Do you think a month is only a little bit of time to travel?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's probably sort of an average time to travel. That's a bit of a strange answer, but like it's not a long backpacking trip by any means, but it's definitely sizable enough that you've got to do quite a lot of planning for it.
I find that fascinating because to me a month is like a dream.
Yeah, a month is a really long time for me.
Imagine having a month off, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why I don't think. I think because I see a lot of people going on sort of 3 month trips in between jobs or in between, I don't know, university degrees, things like that. So a month, I don't know. And I guess it's that sort of the annual leave that you get in a year. So if you squish it all together, it's a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess that's how I've come up with a month, maybe. Yeah.
So have you done longer trips?
When I finished school, I took a year off before I went to uni, and I was away for about five or six months then. And that was the longest trip I've done by far. Everything else has been sort of 4 to 6 weeks.
And you're not working during that time, are you? You are. It's purely a trip.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I know some people do, when they sort of take their gap years, some people would go over and work in like the, you know, boarding schools as a support person or something like that, as well as sort of working in a bar or a pub. But I don't know what the visa requirements are to do that. So.
And yeah. Luke, what's your longest trip?
My longest trip is about 3 months.
Yeah.
It could have been a little bit longer. It was a situation where I was traveling right when COVID started. And so then COVID cancelled flights, which then made my trip extended. But I had to come back to Australia, otherwise it would have been permanently extended. And I was not keen on that. It was really interesting what you were kind of talking about before, Amelia, about the different kind of ways in which someone can travel. And obviously we can signpost and list all those different ways. But just for you, generally speaking, when you think about I'm going to go traveling, you can kind of, I guess, separate it as like a holiday where you're just relaxing and traveling where you're like experiencing new things. When you are kind of in your mind thinking, okay, I want to go on a trip somewhere, what does kind of traveling look like for you?
That's a good question. I think I lean more towards wanting to go and experience new things. I'm not super, although when I'm working, sometimes I think, oh, it would be so good to go to a beach and relax, but I don't know that that's my personality or that I'd enjoy that much. So I try and experience new things, go to a new place, but also make time to sort of relax in those places.
So tell us about your most recent trip. Like, what was that travel trip like?
So my boyfriend is an accountant and he was on a secondment to the US. So he was there for just over four months. So at the end, I went over and met him in San Francisco and then did sort of California a little bit, Yosemite, the national park, and then went to Zion National Park in Utah, sort of drove through Arizona, bit of a road trip, and then flew to New York. And that was really interesting because the US has never been the top of my list to go to, especially at the moment as well. It's a bit of a interesting time to go. So in a way that was nice because it was an opportunity to do something that I hadn't necessarily planned or necessarily wanted to do. But I really enjoyed it. I love the national parks, and San Francisco and New York were beautiful as well.
Would you call yourself like a historical tourist or a beach tourist or a hiking tourist? What sort of tourist would you call yourself?
A wine bar tourist.
Fair enough. So bad.
I do like, probably not a beach, I would say. I like the idea of going to a beach for a few days if there is one nearby. So I do like I like going to the historical sites. I really like going to the art galleries and the museums, which is funny because as a kid, if we ever went on family holidays, my mum's only child and my half siblings are much older than me. So it's just, I was the only child and it was always art gallery after art gallery. And I was like, I hate this. but now, of course, I like going there. But yeah, I like to go try new restaurants, wine bars, go shopping.
What about you, Luke? What kind of traveller are you?
Yeah, I think recently it's definitely shifted to being travel, like to explore and experience things. I think it's interesting, and I actually wanted to ask about Amelia's thoughts on this as well, but I've actually found that as I've gotten older, I've enjoyed more the concept of solo traveling than traveling with other people. And I think that solo traveling leads to this more relaxed state when you're kind of experiencing stuff and doing actual travel, because you're not kind of bound by anyone or anything. You can kind of just get up and do your own thing. So I really like that. And I also, even though I do, like when I'm going places, I like to go places that are new. I like to try new things. I like to go places I've never been before. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to sacrifice comfort. Like I still stay at hostels, but I still feel like it's a relatively comfortable experience. Like it doesn't just mean you have to continually be going. Yeah, I think definitely more for me, it's travel than relaxation. But also like, look, not to undermine what I've been doing in life, but do I feel like I really need to be relaxing at this stage in life? Maybe not. Maybe I haven't done enough to the point where I'm like burnt out or tired enough where I need to just literally stop. That's kind of how I see it. Amelia, what do you think about like solo traveling? I guess traveling with your partner, you might consider that pair traveling.
Yeah. I've never traveled in sort of a group, like an organized group trip. I've traveled with friends, like a couple friends, one friend with my partner, and then with my parents, obviously, when I was growing up. And I've done a little bit of solo travel. I think it's really good. I think, you know, you hear people's experiences of solo travel and it's like life-changing, life-altering sort of thing. I haven't had that experience because I haven't done that much solo traveling. But yeah, I definitely think it's a really good opportunity to see a new place, but also like spend some time by yourself.
Well, just going back to your experiences with the traveling, and this is, again, might be a question you never thought about. Do you think that the way that you travel is pretty consistent with the way people in our generation travel?
I think so. Yeah, I think it probably is. I think that there's sort of, and this probably spans across generations, but there's places that everyone goes at one point. So it's like Euro summer, everyone goes to Europe. Or I feel like a lot of people are going to Southeast Asia at the moment. Everyone's going to Vietnam. Japan's another big one. So I think in that regard, I'm sort of going to the same places as everyone else in our generation is. And social media probably has a role to play there.
That's a question I've got about that. Like, how are you, both of you, choosing your destinations? Is it that you're seeing it on Instagram or TikTok, or is it people that you're talking to? Like, how are you picking these destinations? Because I watch a lot of that sort of stuff as well, I feel like there's almost a bucket list for Gen Zs that they have to see this, and they have, like you said, Euro summer, it's like immediately, oh yeah, okay, there's a bucket list thing, yeah. Mm. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. I was having a think about the role of social media, and I think it probably subconsciously I choose destinations based on social media, but I kind of think like, oh no, social media hasn't influenced my choice of where I'm going, the country, for example, but it's definitely consciously influenced what I'm doing within that country, even the cities that I'm going to within that country. But that being said, I think it would be pretty unlikely that it's not also influencing the country or the destination.
But then for you and you too, Luke, is it important for you then to document that on social media, that you've done it?
I would say, well, I mean, I don't really document anything on social media, so no, but I do have like, I'm not sure if it's Google Maps itself or some like Google Maps adjacent application, but I do like have pinned for myself where I've been, like which countries and cities.
Oh, wow.
And that's kind of how I decide where I'm going next. Is normally I'll pick a place I haven't been, but I might pick one or two places. Like Europe, it's a little bit easier because everything's connected. Like you trip and you're in another country. So I can pick Europe and go, okay, I'll go to one or two places I've been before. And then from there, build out to other places. I wouldn't say that the country itself is picked by social media, but I'm definitely someone that is like, I've got 50 tabs open when I've decided I'm going to like Japan, for example, and I'm looking up like 100 things to do in Japan. And that's definitely taking a big it's influenced me pretty significantly about where I'm going.
Yeah.
But can I just say, like, when I was in my 20s, we weren't probably traveling that much. And the only way that Scott and I were seeing the world was through conferences that were happening. And we didn't have the internet really. Well, we did, but not in the same way. We used Lonely Planet guides a lot. And so basically we have a Lonely Planet book for each of the places we traveled in our 20s. And that's how we chose our restaurants, how we chose where we stayed, what sites we saw. It wasn't Google.
I'm the same.
Yeah.
I've got lots of Lonely Planet books of different countries, lots and lots.
And we're now thinking of throwing them out because I'm like, we're not actually going to look back at them.
And they're out of date.
And they're out of date.
That restaurant doesn't exist.
But I think social, because, you know, you see on social media, they say those posts, which countries have you been to? And you're meant to tick them off. Like, I see that quite a lot. And then I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting seeing where everyone's traveled to.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, and I should clarify that I'm like Luke. I don't really post on social media. It's not for any particular reason other than I just kind of can't be bothered to do it. I just like, or I get, what is it? A decision paralysis. I can't decide what to post. So it's more that I use it. I see things and I'm like, oh, that looks really nice. I'll go there. And I do like Condé Nast, things like that, looking at those guides. Lonely Planet, if I have the book, I'll kind of flick through it. But again, if it's sort of out of date. Yeah. And then also Substack, where people sort of write up recommendations of what to do in a city. That's quite good. You can subscribe to people's recommendations. That's good for wine bars.
It's good for wine.
Yeah, I think that what we probably see an increase of now on things like social media, because it's, maybe there are people that are like making videos about like going and visiting like the Taj Mahal or the Eiffel Tower. But I feel like a lot of the content around travel is more about finding places that you probably haven't heard of, or the idea is live in this country, because everyone wants that like authentic experience when they travel. So I think there's a big shift now where it's not just about these are the places you have to go, it's like these are the places you have to go if you want the insider experience.
And it is a lot like that. Like I know that people use Reddit as well quite a bit to see, because it's anonymous, people just post what they thought of a place or where they recommend that you go or what hike they'd recommend you do when you're at such and such national park or things like that.
So what's been your favourite trip that you've taken and why?
A couple of years ago I went on a trip to Europe with my boyfriend and we met my mum there, we met his mum there, we met friends along the way, and that was really nice. That was a good amount of relaxation. And I should say too, when I go on these trips, I want to do lots of things, but I'm also like sleeping in until 10 a.m. sometimes. So it is relaxing in that regard.
Leek?
Mine would probably be, I think, solo traveling. It would have either been, I think at the end of 2023, I solo traveled Japan. And that was, I think solo traveling, you also just learn a lot about yourself. Again, traveling doesn't have to be introspective, guys. It could be fun, but I just find that here I am, waffling basically, but I found it was like this perfect combination of maybe because you're able to assimilate a little bit more because you're just one person, so it's easier to just kind of get lost in it all. There was a good balance of like, as Millie said, traveling but also resting and just learning a lot.
Yeah, I remember when you went to Japan, because I then went beginning of 2024, and so I was like, oh, give me your recommendations.
That's interesting. Yeah. So you guys then with friends will kind of be like, oh, you just went. Tell me where you did, what you did and how you did it kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure I went to similar cities that Luke went to. I love that Japan trip as well. That was over Easter. So only about 2 weeks, I think. And that was a good amount of time. The flight's it's not that far away.
Yeah.
And there's just so much to do. It's just like the easiest place to travel. So good.
So we've talked, I guess, timelines in terms of how long you might go. Actually, did I ask what your ideal length for a trip is? And I guess it is kind of based on where you're going, because you might argue, again, going to somewhere in Asia a bit closer, maybe 2 weeks is fine, somewhere in Europe more than a month.
Mm.
What would you say your ideal trip length is?
I'd probably say between 2 weeks and 5 weeks, maybe, to 6 weeks, depending on the place.
Yeah. I would say similarly, around maybe 5 weeks I think is pretty good. It's interesting because I feel like when I was growing up, the way that my parents pitched it was like 10 days was the sweet spot, no matter where you went. And now it's like, no, you can't go to somewhere for less than a month to experience it properly. Mm. It's really interesting.
Yeah, now 10 days would be, just a quick trip.
That's
yeah,
a feature.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Can you speak to that, Dash and Fiona?
Yeah.
My limit is 2 weeks. Anything over 2 weeks, I'm like, I want to go home, back to my bed, back to my routine, get my clothes washed properly. But I'm not someone who loves doing, and I've never been a long stint traveller. Like I remember when I was a kid, we went to America and Canada and the UK, and we missed a lot of school. Mm. And I remember thinking, wow, this is such a long trip. God, I sound like a privileged brat, but I was like, we were staying with family the whole time, but like, I just am someone who likes my own routine, so I sometimes find travel not as restful because of that.
I have this theory. You have the first week off to let your brain just calm down.
Mm.
The second week, your brain has calmed down, so you're starting to relax in the second week. And then the third week is when you decide you don't want to go back to work. And that's why longer than 3 weeks is a bit dangerous.
You might not come back. And then you're 2 weeks notice.
That's my theory.
Another thing that I was thinking about as well is that the frequency of travel, I feel like, has increased like exponentially. I feel like with most of my friends, they have this mindset of like, I have to travel at least once a year.
Really?
To almost kind of make, you know, the opportunities worthwhile of having time off. And when I think back to it as a kid, like the concept of going somewhere else and spending a considerable period of time there wasn't something that it seemed like culturally was a big thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think as a kid, my grandparents lived in England, and then I have family in France too. So we did used to go there semi-frequently, but it was never for a holiday. Like, it was going to see family. I think probably COVID has a bit of a role to play. Like, our generation, I mean, everyone got robbed of a few years, but we felt like, oh, we got robbed of those good years, you know. So people are trying to make up for that. And also financially, no one's really saving for a house, I don't think.
Oh.
I mean, do you think that's it, Luke? Like, yeah, people aren't really, it's pretty unaffordable to buy a house. So it's like, oh, we'll just travel.
Might as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I was just sitting on that for a sec. You're right. I think there's definitely now this idea of like, there's buying a house, there's buying a car. And, you know, those are kind of considered the bigger investments that you're saving up for. But you're right, Amelia. I think that now, from at least what I'm hearing from my friends as well, there's this idea of now a long-term investment is saving up for 5 weeks off at the middle of the year to go traveling.
How does that affect your work? Like, I can't imagine asking work for 5 weeks off. Like, if I said to work I want 5 weeks off, they would look at me sideways, I'm sure. Just...
Well, look, when Amelia was away, we were counting down for her to come back. Because you're such a pivotal part of the team. But you did a brilliant handover. We did feel so bad because we did contact her a few times being like, sorry, we don't know what to do. But I, as a millennial boss, I guess, I'm like, go forth and travel. Like, I think... I think it's extraordinary and exciting, and I want people to be able to have that opportunity. But I guess it's just, I don't know, I can't imagine, unless there was like some big project deadline where I'll be like, oh, maybe not now, can you do it a bit later? But I don't even think that would really be a thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we're lucky in this line of work in some regards. And Dash is very easygoing, like you boys. And I actually do, when I come back, I always say, oh, I'm really excited to be back at work. And I'm not just saying that. I actually am really excited to see everyone and be back into a routine. That's what I don't like about traveling, is I feel a bit untethered by the time you're back.
But coming back and being excited means you're truly relaxed.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're refreshed. You're ready to go again.
Yeah.
Which is really important, I think.
Yeah.
That's why you need, you know, like you're saying, 10 days isn't enough. It actually isn't enough. Mm. It isn't, well, it just... It isn't enough to just calm that brain down, I reckon. Yeah.
And I think certainly, like, I'm 26 now, probably when I'm older, there might not be that same opportunity to just go away. Yeah, I don't know. But, and then my boyfriend, I'm thinking about that, like, as an accountant, there's certain times of the year, end of financial year, you just can't really go away if you're working in audit. So, Luke, have you had trouble getting time off?
What I was going to say was, and again, this is just the people that I'm around. Even though I'm 27, my friends are 26, 27, most of us are still either in uni or still like have just finished uni, which is why, like, just off recording, I think Amelia and I were talking about, oh, you know, back when I was in my undergrad and it feels like it was quite recent, but it actually wasn't. But it's just, we've been in uni for so long that I feel like a lot of people don't have either the career at that stage that they're willing, like they're wanting to build on because they're still studying, or they don't have a job at all. And so it's just kind of hanging out in between uni and then traveling.
Can I just say something, as you two just saying your age? At 26, I had been married 2 years. I owned a home and I owned a business.
That is so wild. I'm like, I just feel like this a baby. This is crazy, that's isn't amazing.
It? But that's why I couldn't take 5 weeks off work. But that was a very Gen X thing.
Yeah.
That's what you did. You just got on, no gap years or anything.
No.
It's just incredible listening to the difference in the stories.
And for me, at 26, I was married for 3 years, renting. We didn't own a place or anything. But I just started my PhD. So I knew then for the next 3 or 4 years, travel wasn't going to be and both Scott and I were doing our PhDs at the same time, so we're both broke. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily something we were going to be able to afford to do very easily.
Because I know a lot of Gen Z still live at home as well in that age group. And I've got a friend who's got two Gen Z boys who were travelling, like taking the 6 weeks off and going to Croatia and all that. But she was pretty upset about it. She was just like, they get free food and they get free rent. Yeah. And I can't afford to go to Croatia for 6 weeks and they can.
The holiday's on me, boys.
She's like, oh, my God.
This might be a big call. Amelia, tell me if I'm off on this, but I do feel like thinking about it now, a house in terms of, you know, in Generation X to now, equally as vital a commodity to own, not just in terms of owning it, but living in one. But in terms of value, I feel as though things like travel, experiences are increasing in value to the point where they're almost rivaling owning a house. Like, I'm sure that there'd be some people where if you ask them, you know, I don't own a house, but I've traveled to like 60 countries, they would say that's just as valuable.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the perception has probably changed a bit. And I also think that travel is more affordable for our generation than it used to be.
For sure.
Would you say?
It's almost like listening to you two Gen Zs going on, the great Australian dream isn't to go and buy a house anymore.
The great Australian dream with the white picket fence.
Yeah,
is to go and travel.
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, it's a great thing to have those sort of experiences. It grows you as a human being, honestly.
Yeah, no, I feel very privileged that we're able to travel so much, get the time off work and, you know, be able to travel, afford to travel.
And we should tell our listeners that both of you pay for it all yourselves. Like, it's not something that you're privileged to just get. You work hard for this. This is something you deserve.
It's been kind of funny in the past few trips because there was one occasion in Japan and we'd booked this hotel, look nice on booking.com, like cheap hotel, whatever. Wasn't very nice when we arrived. And so we're like, oh, we can't stay here for three nights, but like we just need to get through it. And then after a while we were like, we both work full time. We could, and we are adults, we could just book another hotel. It was kind of funny because, like, I don't really, I haven't stayed in that many hostels, to be honest, anyway. But, like, on my recent trip, I didn't stay. Not that there's hostels in the US, really, anyway. I think there are a few, but they're not a big deal. But there's ways that you can be kind of, like, nifty about traveling. Like, when we're in New York, we sublet someone's apartment, so it was very cheap. Like, it was, I think, $60 AUD per person per night.
Wow.
I mean, my friend did have to sleep on the couch, sorry, Claire. But there's kind of ways around.
So what are your travel hacks like that? What do Gen Zs do as travel hacks?
Well, sleep on the couch.
Sleep on the couch.
Yeah.
I mean, like, our generation didn't have Airbnb. We would never have sublet anything. Like, that would have just been, I don't know,
out of the wheelhouse.
Yeah.
We would have thought we were all going to get murdered.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it just wasn't a thing. It would have been. And as a kid, I remember before Airbnb, like, sometimes we'd stay in bed and breakfast, but sometimes, like, it was a bit weird.
Yeah.
Like, I remember having some kind of weird experience, cheap bed and breakfast, and we're like, uh-oh. I don't know. I'm a big advocate for Beam It. It's an app where you can split. I use it. Me and my housemates use it as well. And I went on a conference last year with few of our colleagues and I was like, guys, everyone has to get Beam It. And basically you can put in everything that you've spent and it does the maths for you and adjusts it, and then it just spits out a thing right at the end of the trip, or you can do it whenever, of who owes who what. And it's owned by Macquarie. It's owned by like some of the big banks, and you can just connect your card and you just swipe and it just pays it.
Oh,
wow. Yeah,
it's really good for kind of trying to work out, oh, who owes who this? And I know some people use Splitwise as well, but that doesn't have the capacity to pay through the app.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. I've never even heard of that.
No, it's really good. Beam It.
Beam It.
Yeah, really good. Just an app.
And it's probably because I don't travel with friends. I travel with my husband, or I travel with my sisters.
Yeah.
And that's all my parents. That's about it. I don't travel with friends like that. But that sounds like a great idea. Beam it.
Beam it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to remember
it's
that.
It's really good. B-double-E-M.
Yeah. Talking about expenses, do you guys always take out travel insurance?
I always do. I think I am like, oh, I don't know, highly cautious of everything. I always think worst case scenario. So I'm like, travel insurance every time. Yeah. Luke, do you?
I do not.
The only time
that I might do it, and I've done this once or twice, is, and look, I actually don't really know how it works, but sometimes I'll transfer my mum money and she'll buy it on a credit card, and on certain credit cards you can get that insurance. But I wouldn't, if I was just buying it just myself, I probably wouldn't be buying travel insurance.
Why not? I wouldn't go anywhere without it.
No, neither would I.
So Luke, why are you not buying travel insurance? Like, not thinking about it, or think you'll be fine?
I meant to be really reflective. Honestly, I just don't think I'm necessarily thinking about it, to be honest. And I guess it maybe has to do with my travel style as well, despite, you know, whole adventures and whatnot. I'm pretty like, I'm not someone that's like, oh, because I'm going on a holiday, therefore I'm going to act in any way that I wouldn't normally act like. And I'm a relatively cautious person day to day. That doesn't really change when I'm on holidays. And not that this matters, like, you should get travel insurance irrespective of how you are, because it's for accidents more than anything that you can't predict. But yeah, I just have just never, I guess, thought about it.
So do you guys take like adventures when you're on holidays? Like, do you hire motorcycles or bungee jump or whitewater rafting, or, you know, really popular to the hot air balloons, where sometimes insurances won't cover that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I don't know if it's my mum's voice in my head, but I don't do any of that. Like, okay. I just have her voice being, something terrible's going to happen. And even for boyfriend's dad's 60th, a couple of years ago, we got hot air balloons in the Yarra Valley, and mum's like, kept sending me articles about hot air balloons. And so I don't know if that's a generation thing for me, or just a mum thing. I don't know what it is.
Your millennial Gen X mum's going, no.
Exactly. And it's probably that worst case scenario thing as well.
Yeah. How about you, Luke?
The only time I've done anything like that, actually, I did it once. I went white water rafting in Malaysia and I did knock out a tooth. So that probably would have been smart to have travel insurance then.
Oh my God.
That was when I was 15, and then when I was 21, I went with my friends to Morocco and we went on like dune buggies and we drove in the desert. But since then, that I think that was confidence in numbers thinking. Like, I would not do probably any of that again, I don't think.
And particularly while you're traveling solo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I think I'm very privileged as a guy, where traveling solo can sometimes be, or it probably is considerably safer, but that doesn't mean that you can injure yourself and be okay.
Yeah, that's true. And now you saying that has just made me think, I did actually, when I went to Mexico with a friend last year, and I did go horse riding, and my brother was like, what the hell, that is such a bad idea, there's no OH&S. But I'm like, oh, it's just horses, it's fine. That probably wouldn't be covered though.
I don't think I've horse ridden a lot overseas, but yeah, I'm not sure. You have to, like, back when I travelled years and years ago, all that sort of stuff was covered, but not anymore. Like, you'd have to read the fine print pretty closely.
Yeah.
Like, I was even looking at a trip in Japan we were looking at last year. People like to hire those Mario Karts and drive through the city. I don't think you're covered if you have an accident in that, you know, and that seems pretty innocuous. But and then also if you've drunk some alcohol beforehand for any of that sort of stuff, they don't cover you if you have any alcohol level. I think a lot of insurances don't. That gets me to another question for you too, because we've heard it a lot in the media about alcohol when you travel. Is that something that worries you at all? Because we have had cases where, is it methanol that's been put into alcohol, particularly youths, you know, a lot of accommodation where youth stay. Is that something that ever crosses your minds, or...?
I think if I was going to those countries where things have recently happened, probably would cross my mind. I don't drink heaps anyway, and probably if I was at a hostel, I'd be maybe a little bit cautious, I suppose.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and I think maybe that's another interesting thing about Gen Z when it comes to traveling. I think that there is very little like fear-mongering when it comes to places. I feel like for the majority, like I've got friends that I know are currently like traveling in Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, places that, you know, maybe culturally aren't popular hotspots, but this concept of like they are like unsafe or like have to be avoided, I don't think that exists as much anymore. And so just thinking about that, I think that I would be handling those situations, those places, in the same level of caution that I would just generally speaking. And if, you know, my gut told me to avoid drinking at certain places, maybe I would. But again, if you're being responsible, like, and also just kind of culturally aware about what's going on, I think that you'd probably be relatively safe.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're probably both quite cautious as people anyway, and that just translates to when we travel. Yeah.
So is it important to have sustainability when you travel?
Yeah, this one's really interesting and it relates a little bit to, I was thinking about the role that AI has sort of started playing in travel. And so for the first time on this recent trip, we were asking ChatGPT, like, make us a plan for what to do in Zion National Park. And it was quite good, like what it would give us, but just asking question after question after question. And I started thinking, like, that's not sustainable at all. I think it definitely, yeah, it definitely does though. And it's hard to with air travel as well.
Especially from Australia.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I feel I don't want to sit here and say, oh, I take it really seriously, because then I get on a plane over to Europe and that's probably not the best at all.
Would you pay more on your airfare for carbon neutral?
I do. I actually don't know if I've ever done it internationally, but I do when I fly to Sydney to visit my family. Mm-hmm. It's just there on the Jetstar website and it's quite reasonably priced.
Yes.
To do that, yeah.
How about you, Luke?
Just going back, what is that, the carbon neutral?
So when you book certain airfares, there's a thing that you can tick that you pay a little bit extra to make your flight carbon neutral.
But how do they do that?
I think they
plant a tree.
Yeah, yeah, stuff like that. There's all different sorts of things they do. They try to offset it, that matches the flight itself and the damage that it's doing to the environment. And so they try to do something that will match that in helping the environment. And it could be different things.
Luke's looking very cynical about this.
I'm crunching the numbers. I just don't know if they're adding up.
It's like, what was that thing as a kid? You'd play it on your computer and it would be like, every time you play this game, it will provide some rice to people.
Yeah, I remember that.
Was it doing that? Yeah.
But it is interesting, like, as someone who books travel for work and for my team members, Monash prioritises the flights that are better for the environment.
Okay.
And so they're kind of like, that comes into, even if it's a little bit more expensive, they'll be like, pick this flight because it's got less of a carbon footprint.
Oh, that's important.
But it is hard. It's hard living in Australia because we're just so bloody far away from everything. Like,
exactly.
It's not like we can, like you said before, Luke, when you're in Europe, you can just trip into another country. Mm. You can't really do that here.
Yeah. Whenever I get on a plane, I feel really bad about it for the first little bit. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
So that actually crosses your mind, because it wouldn't cross mine. I know that sounds weird to say, but that does actually come into your heads.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it probably does come into my head as well. I always look at the plane map when I'm on the plane, on the screens of it flying over, and I'm like, geez, we're going a long way. And that just can't be that good. But I'm also a bit of a nervous flyer, so I'm also kind of preoccupied.
Just thinking about
that.
Survival.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, why are we in this metal tube up in the sky?
Yeah.
I don't think this scientifically makes sense. No, it does, obviously.
So what's one bucket list destination you haven't been to yet?
It doesn't sound funny, but I haven't seen that much of Australia. And I feel quite, that's a bit of, it's a bit weird, because why have I gone overseas so much? Or not so much, but quite a bit, when I haven't seen that much of Australia. And growing up, my favourite book was Are We There Yet? By Alison Lester. I don't know if you know that picture book.
Yeah.
And they get a caravan and they drive all around the outside of Australia. And that was always a dream of mine. I know that in reality, it's probably not as glamorous as that picture book made it seem, but I'd love to see more of Australia.
How about you, Luke?
Yeah, I guess this is coming from a real position of privilege and also probably showing how much I value travel. But I would say that almost every place that I've wanted to go, I've been able to go to. I think for me, it'd probably be a more cultural thing of maybe going to Greece, yeah, from more of a cultural lens and spending a bit of time there and maybe just trying to reconnect with some of those roots, because I've got quite a few family members still in Greece, almost in the sense of like, I live in Australia, why wouldn't I travel Australia? Like, you know, I bounce around places in Europe and I have before, but there've been times where I think my last two times I went to Europe, I didn't go to Greece.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's probably a lot of wealth of experience to have there. So I feel like that's something that I would be probably wanting to do. Do you guys have, I mean, I imagine everyone's got bucket lists for traveling. Dash, Fiona, do you guys have places you want to go?
I mean, it's really interesting because Scott and I talk about it all the time and we really want to go. He really wants to take me to Italy because that's one of his favorite places. And he travels way more than I do for work. And, you know, I have been privileged to come along to a lot of his trips, but I haven't gone to Italy. But both of us are kind of at that career stage where we're like, oh, how are we going to take that much time off? Plus, we have a dog who is very needy. So we're kind of like post-dog. Oh, my God, I shouldn't say that. But post-dog, maybe that would be a trip we would take, is to go to Italy or, yeah, parts of Europe we haven't seen, but we have seen quite a bit. I think it's just hilarious that Scott is going to Sri Lanka without me. Fiona?
Well, one of my bucket lists was to do a lot of Australia, and I have. But I would actually, I haven't been to Alice, to Ayers Rock, and I keep thinking I would really like to do a trip to Ayers Rock. I've done all the outside and done a lot of inside as well.
Because it's Uluru, and then what's the is the marble thing near that? No.
No.
Yes? No?
No.
That's somewhere. Australia's so big.
Yeah, Australia's so big.
People don't realise.
Yeah. It's massive.
But I have a lot of countries which I know I'll never get to now.
Such as?
So I don't think I'll ever get to Africa. I don't think or countries, let's just say continents. I don't think I'll ever go to South America because I worry about my health in those countries and the insurance for me to travel is too high to go to those countries. Mm. I was talking to one of my sisters recently and she did a 3-month trip in the back of a truck through Africa, like all the way down to South, from the very top all the way down to South Africa. And I was thinking, I would never be able to do that. I wouldn't be able to have insulin supplies. I don't know. I do think a lot about what I wouldn't get to now, you know, now that I'm older and things like that. But I have a real pull for Europe again. I just want to, I've seen a lot of Europe, but I have a real pull. I'm a historical tourist. I just love all that sort of European history. I'd like to get back to that.
Hey guys, it's Luke here. Thanks so much for listening to the XYZ Experiment podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a like, follow, and tell your friends and family about us.